while this is loading up, everybody stand up, do a little stretch. I don't want anybody falling asleep after lunch. Stretch, stretch. I know it's being recorded. That's good.
You're doing your job.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So what I'm going to talk about is health educators' roles in the innovative ACA models in our state, especially in our state, in Minnesota. But also, I want you to be able to take away, like, oh, okay, they're doing it there. They might be doing it in my state, and how can I apply this in my state as well? I have no relationships to disclose. And what I'm going to do is talk just a little bit about our foundation within Minnesota. I think it's really important because a lot of these things come in and there's new innovations, et cetera. But what we've done is we've really taken a look and tried to ground ourselves and really create a good foundation so that we can continue to build on it and always improve. Jeff talked about the triple aim. Our legislation, so our health reform legislation that was passed in 2008, the main goals were the triple aim. So it's healthier communities, better health care, and lower costs. And that's the from the Institute of Medicine's triple aim. So in regards to what had occurred in Minnesota, we had a number of goals. One of them is the prevention and public health. We have a statewide health improvement program, and so that's funding that goes to all of our states or all of our counties within our state to our local public health to work on active living, healthy eating, tobacco-free living, and then in different settings such as healthcare, childcare, community, schools, etc. So again, fighting obesity and tobacco, and I just talked about that. We have care redesign and payment reform, and this is our healthcare home. So healthcare homes, aka patient-centered medical home. We chose to use this term because medical home kept it more of the medical model, and healthcare home we wanted to begin to extend out into other areas of people's lives, so not just thinking about the medical. We have quality incentive payments as well. Right now we have half of our, and so another thing that occurred is that in Minnesota we decided to create our own certification program and not use the NCQA patient-centered medical home recognition program. Right now we have half of our primary care clinics are certified as healthcare homes that serves over 2.3 million people. We have transparency. So when Jeff talked about those regional improvement networks, we work with our local one to create measures that then are collected from the primary care, so it's direct data submission, that then is publicly reported. And anybody can look at how well the clinics are doing. So we have 5 to 10 measures that are publicly reported by all the clinics. You can look at health system or clinics individually, and then you can compare and rate how well they're doing. The intention is to engage consumers to take a look. Let's say, okay, I have diabetes, and I want to really pick a clinic that does good care in diabetes. And so I'll look at the clinics that might be in the area where I live or where I work or whatever's in my health plan, and then pick the clinic based on that. And then we also have health HIT or health information technology. One of the things that we really are working hard on is data exchange between entities, and we are doing fairly well in our e-prescribing. So with the state health improvement program, and half of my salary is part of this program, we received $47 million in funding the first go-around for funding. Suddenly, our legislature didn't like this anymore. They said, oh, you're doing policies, systems, environment change. Oh, you're telling us what to do. Oh, we don't like that. And so then the funding went down. Well, then people galvanized and started to complain and really worked with the legislature to inform them about it. And so our last go-around, we do have $35 million now, and it goes to all of our states. And then this is just a little description. One of the things that our goal is that with the obesity and with the tobacco, we want to improve by 9% for those two measures. So how do health educators and certified health education specialists, what are they doing? I picked a few of them and showed you from throughout the state where they're located. When we take a look at Sarah and Andrea, so they're on opposite ends, they work on the statewide health improvement program. They're leads in their community, and they work in all of the areas of all the settings with health care, with schools, et cetera. And they help coordinate what is called a community leadership team. And so for each SHIP grantee that we have, they're required to have a community leadership team that encompasses supporters, partners, et cetera, from their community to take a look at their SHIP plan. We have Amy down in the corner. She's a professor at the Mankato State University in the community health program. She's on a community leadership team, and she also links students to do work within the different SHIP with the grantees and helps be able to place them. We look on this side. Lindsay over here is a fairly new graduate from the program. She does outreach. She works for a federally qualified healthcare center. They received funding to do outreach for our exchange. So for our market exchange for the health plans is called MNSURE. So she goes out into the community, talks to community members, helps them sign up for insurance, the uninsured, to help them figure out the whole system, figure out what's best for people, and get them signed up for health insurance. She is also a community health worker as well, so she has a dual role of being a certified health education specialist and a CHW. Christy Van Riper, very instrumental in working in our residency programs with the University of Minnesota Primary Care, in being able to transform those clinics to become patient-centered medical homes. She collects the data. She provides the information back to the clinics on certain information on how well the each individual provider is doing. Amanda is a student, a recently graduated student, who assisted Fairview Health Services, one of our bigger health systems, as they were just embarking on doing their community health needs assessment. So she did that as through her preceptorship through the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And Shirley now works on our state innovation model grant, so just to kind of give you an idea. Remember when I said it went down, and so when the funding went down, certain parts of the state did not receive funding. It became competitive that time. And so when we got the funding was reinstituted, then they went back into the planning phase. So the counties that have the lines are the ones that had to do additional planning and then move back up into implementation. So some of the things that we do when we're talking to our local public health is looking at the functions, and then whatever we do to make sure that, okay, we've got community health needs assessments, we've got stakeholder engagement with community leadership teams, we do community health improvement planning, and we link to primary care. This is the essence of what we do with our statewide health improvement program, and we always try again to pick out what align with whatever the functions are. So Elaine said that I work on the clinical community linkage, so I don't necessarily work on everything. It's really that integration. And that's really difficult for people that might not have worked in clinics. They've worked in local public health. Jeff talked about learning the lexicon. You know, it takes people a little bit of time. So what I've done is I've been able to help people to be able to understand and to be able to link. My computer is moving me along. So one of our models or framework to help say things that are or to communicate with clinics is to be able to, and for local public health, is how do you identify populations? How do you screen or who are you screening? How do you counsel? Is it a brief intervention? What kinds of resources can we provide? Refer and then follow. Must be because I'm hovering over it, but refer and follow up. So this is basically our model, and local public health can begin to work with clinics, and we're focused again on obesity, both pediatric and adult, and then tobacco use, and so this just describes it. This is a picture of how it could look, and so we again at the state level provide our local public health ways to be able to talk to clinics and to begin to work with them. Local public health really helps to provide the resources, and then sometimes they have additional dollars where they may provide training and offer training and motivational interviewing, maybe a contract, small contract or mini grant with the clinic to give them time to think about how they're going to focus on it. Right now, they're not necessarily focused on anything dealing with prevention or chronic disease prevention. The money isn't there right now. They're really focused on keeping people out of the emergency room, out of additional hospitalization. So we're kind of in the beginning, and it gets to be a little bit of a struggle. When we talk about, Jeff talked about our accountable care organizations. Our healthcare home is the foundation. These little, each one triangle is basically what it's part of our standards for a healthcare home. When you add in shared risk or benefits, that's sharing of maybe savings of dollars, or if you lose dollars, then you're sharing that risk. But what I've done is for certified health education specialists, where do our competencies fit into these? And I think we do really well with this. This is to help be able to say that, yes, certified health education specialists do have the competencies to fit into whatever's going on with patient-centered medical home or ACOs. Okay, so with the Affordable Care Act passes in 2010, and I was so excited because it was passed on my birthday. But anyway, the community transformation grants came in, and that was one of the other parts that I worked on. I'm not going to go into detail with everything. Congress, in their great wisdom, decided to end the program. However, the prevention fund didn't disappear. So there's new dollars that have flowed, and it's this big, long, huge name, and we could say 1422 because it's just easier. But that's the old CTG funds. So with the Community Transformation Grant, I worked in the clinical services. We worked in specific communities to really take a look at how can clinics do that screen, counsel, refer, follow-up, but work with community-based organizations or other kinds of services that weren't necessarily part of the overall electronic health record. So we did that. We have a regional learning collaborators. I'll talk in a minute about that. Our Minnesota community measurement, again, that's that regional health care improvement network. We created a measure, an optimal risk reduction measure, looking at obesity, looking at blood pressure and tobacco use, and we've just piloted that. And then preventative services reimbursement. One of the difficult things that's going on right now is we have what's called fee-for-service. You go in, you're sick, you have a doctor visit, doctor says, okay, they bill it, and they get reimbursed. And there's not much funding for when it's a preventative health or chronic disease prevention, but we're moving into more of this bundled care, global payment, or some other kind of payment, and it's really difficult when you don't have your profession as getting a specific reimbursement for this to have that reimbursement. To, to, to to have some money. So we were trying to figure out what could we do. Well, what we found out is that right now, just in short, is that clinics aren't even billing for what they can for reimbursement for primary care for preventative services. It's because the coders are so much into really focusing on where they're going to get the most money, so that they just, if something's denied or something's not right, they just don't deal with it or follow up with it. So that was one of the big things, because we kept hearing, well, the docs say we don't get reimbursed, and then the coder's like, well, I suppose we could get it, but we just don't do it. Okay. And then I know I need to move along. One of the other grants that we now have in Minnesota it's called the State Innovation Model Grant. Minnesota was awarded the largest testing grant, so it's the blue states that received the testing grant. In February of 2013, 5 other states also received them, and then 16 states received design, so that they were working on how they were going to do the design. There is a second round that just went out, and they haven't announced it yet. Some of us know who's part of it, but they asked us not to say anything. So I don't have that picture. So anyway, so for our State Innovation Model Grant, it's to support the development of our model for multi-payer payment. And so for Minnesota, we have 3 questions. I have to read them because they don't roll off my tongue. So it's like, what are we testing? Can we improve health and lower costs if more people are covered by ACOs, so the accountable care organizations? So can we begin to create more ACOs? And so that's that larger network. If we invest in data analytics, health information technology, practice facilitation, and quality improvement, can we accelerate the adoption of ACO models and remove barriers to the integration of care, including, so not just primary care, but behavioral health, social services, public health, and long-term services and supports, especially among smaller rural and safety net providers? So that's a really big question. And then how are health outcomes and costs improved when the ACOs adopt a community care team, an accountable community for health model to support the integration of health care with non-medical services compared to those that do not adopt these? So now we're bringing in social determinants of health. And when we talk about all of these other kinds of services, so we're trying to blend, okay, triple aim and social determinants of health. So with the accountable community for health, what we're really looking at is a health and well-being, and so we just put out requests for proposals, got some back, looking at different populations. A requirement was that the ACO did not have to be the lead, and we didn't necessarily want them to be the lead, but they needed to be participating to take a look to see, can we deal with social determinants of health, can we deal with the care and integration. So lastly, what I wanted to talk about is we had a learning collaborative, and we had an ASTO, Association for State Territorial Health Officials, multi-state learning collaborative. And one of the things that we were able to add in, and I just wanted to show you, was, and it was with Riverwood Healthcare. So I'm looking at the yellow, and then especially in one of the counties, Riverwood Health Center. They hired a health coach who had a health background, implemented the best practices of our model, and what they did is really created a framework within the healthcare clinics on how to, it's a pathway to engage and improve health outcomes with patients. The impact of the health coaching on health and blood pressure control, I found this very interesting. When the patients were referred to Dan, his name was, to one or if they were referred for a health coach visit and received 2 or less, their blood pressure change wasn't that much. But anything going 3 visits and above, they had a significant change. This just shows their outcomes, and as you can see when you look at this, is that looking from uncontrolled blood pressure to controlled blood pressure, so our blue and our yellow, working with the health coach, that really improved, going from yellow to blue then. And because it's a population measure, it's really hard to move that green, but we were able to see significant. And then again, in being able to provide data feedback, et cetera, and how well health coaching is, we are able to give patients a graph on how well they're doing. And how I want to end is, I really want to make sure that people understand how maybe states are funded through different funds, and this comes from ASTO. The largest funding is federal, and because there is the prevention fund, I just want to make sure that people really think about and can advocate to make sure that prevention fund stays within the Affordable Care Act. And then I just have a couple of frameworks just to say that health educators fit in all of these, and that we do understand and can have a systems approach. And all the people that I mentioned of what they do fit into this. Thank you.